open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
And so it shall be. We will be talking Twilight Zone with the usual suspects, Kitty and Bobby and Ken. Here's your host for tonight's show, Bobby Neer. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Dan. Thank you very much. And hello to all of our listeners. We are here again today to continue with our reviews and commentary of The Twilight Zone. This evening we are at episode number 5, a bizarre little time travel story. Interesting at times, even a little creepy at times, but after 25 minutes plus commercials, does it really add up to anything? Before we consider that, here is Kitty with a summary of Walking Distance. Kitty?
Okay, thanks, Bob. Walking Distance, we see a man who's, we are told, is 36 years old, and he's definitely a harried and totally stressed out businessman. He's on the road, and something has happened to his car, so he needs to get it fixed. And he realizes he's not that far from the town that he grew up in, and so he takes a little walk back to see his town while the guy's going to fix his car. And when he gets there, he walks into the old ice cream parlor and discovers it looks exactly the way he remembers it from when he was a kid. And not only does it look the same, but the prices are the same, which is really throwing him for a loop. And then he mentions to the guy about the man who used to own the place, but he died, and the guy kind of looks at him a little funny, and then he saunters off, and then you see the man walk upstairs and open up the door and tell that man, the owner, that they need some more supplies and they need to be ordered. And then this man, Martin Sloan, just keeps walking through the area, and he comes across a little boy and realizes that this little boy knows another person by his name, which is Marty Sloan. And that, by the way, that little boy is played by a very, very young Ron Howard. And then he continues to walk through the park, and then eventually he sees his younger self in a tree, carving his name in a tree, as he was telling a woman how he had carved his name in a tree many years ago. And his younger self runs away from him. And he eventually finds his way back home, and he sees his parents. And, of course, his parents think that he's nuts. And so he gets nowhere there. And then he eventually goes to the carnival area where the old carousel is, and he realizes he wants to go tell his younger self that he needs to enjoy the summer and enjoy being a kid. But of course, all he manages to do is to scare his younger self to the point where he jumps off the carousel and breaks his leg. And eventually, his father catches up to him and realizes that this is his son, who's an adult, and he basically asks him if life is really so terrible where he's from in 1960, and he basically just tells him he's got to go back to where he was, because everybody only gets one summer. And so he starts to walk back, and then he wanders into the ice cream parlor again, only now it's playing rock and roll music, and he's now walking with a limp. And the guy asks him, working behind the counter, how he got the limp. And he said he got it as a kid when he fell off the carousel. And he said, oh, that carousel hasn't been around in a while. And then he eventually limps his way back to his car, and he drives off into the sunset. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. And my impression of it is, I thought it was an okay episode. I thought that his parents were a little miscast. I said that in my review. I thought his parents were a little too old to be his parents of that era. His character was only supposed to be 11 years, his younger self at this point was only 11 years old, and he was an only child. I think it would have been much more interesting to see his parents either being about the same age as him or maybe even slightly younger. I think that would have been a lot more poignant. Not only that, his parents' reaction, while the mother was just very much afraid, we see a point where the older Marty decides he needs to go talk to the younger Marty, and he goes running off screaming Marty, and I thought that the father's reaction was a little out of sorts. You would have thought that any father, if some lunatic wanted to go off and find your kid, you would think the father would start chasing after this lunatic and throw him to the ground and scream to his wife to call the cops. And the other thing that I found a little out of sorts there was that he was so worried about his younger self and enjoying the summer. It seemed to me that his younger self was actually having a pretty good summer until he showed up, and he caused his younger self to break his leg. So it's like he basically ruined his younger self's summer by causing him to break his leg. So I really didn't quite understand what the whole deal was supposed to be there. He was trying to relive something, and instead he ruined it for his younger self. And, my rating on it, I gave it a fair rating at best. So what did you think, Bob and Ken?
Ken, go ahead.
I gave it a 1 rating, which is poor, because this is the 5th episode of the series, and Rod Serling, in baseball terms, is only batting 200. He's 1-for-5. The first episode was good, and the next 4 have been poor. Some of them have been lousy. I mean, the story had the intrigue in the beginning. Okay, the man goes back into time and sees his childhood, his parents, his old house, his old town, what he used to do. So there's a little intrigue there. And then the thing that would get me is if he sees his father, and the father's reaction of, I have a young son, but now he's a grown man, so let's develop the drama there. But it never developed. It went flat. Because Frank Overton, who is the father, is just downright boring. I said that in my review. I mean, he is just plastic. He was, remember him in The Fugitive, Nightmare at North Oak? I didn't like him there either. He was the cop. And his acting is just dry. There's just nothing to it. So I agree, Kitty, with the miscasting of the father. And I think Gig Young was miscast, too. I didn't like him. Get somebody else. Maybe Roddy McDowell would have done a better job. And then the whole end of the story was just awful because, like you said, the mother adds nothing. And then he goes back to his car and drives off. So it didn't have the Twilight Zone feel of the ending of what's going to happen. The way I would have ended it is, what do you think about this, Bob? The father sees his son as a grown adult. How about, Frank Overton, who is the father, sees his father, and the father sees him, and then the grandfather sees his father, and it's kind of like a revolving door where everything's going back into time, and you go back into the different towns and all that. Just do away with all the other stuff in the episode and maybe just have it a revolving door. The generation sees one generation.
That's too convoluted. I was only 12 years old when that played on TV.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think I could have kept up with it at 12. I don't think I could keep up with that story today. You want this one to be that one, and I'm already confused.
Yes, actually, I'm confused, too.
Yeah, I mean, at 12 years old, I don't think I would have gotten any. I think I would have been asleep by that time. Let me just say this. We've been down this road before, and we're going to go through it again and again. And that is the Twilight Zone, a half-an-hour TV program, actually 25 or 26 minutes, overstepping its bounds and becoming too ambitious given the time allotted. And that's hard for me to say because later on when the series, I think around season 3 or 4 or something, goes to an hour, I'm really very opposed to that because I think most of those were horrible. Here you have a less than a half an hour story and you've got too much to get in there and you're not going to get it in there. And, you know, when Ken talks about the story going flat, sure the story went flat because they realized the writer, I don't recall whether Serling just adapted it or if it was an original writer, whoever it was, the fact of the matter is, must have realized this is as far as you can go with this, and that's why the story stops in the middle of nowhere. In order to get anything out of it, you got to know, first of all, the story begins with this guy, played by Gig Young, who appears to be very harried, hustled, some sort of business executive, but I don't really know who he is. I don't know who he is or where he comes from or what he's been putting up with. He seems out of breath and he seems to be, you know, have other things on his mind, but we don't really know about him enough. If I had some sort of background, I might feel more for him than I do here, but he's kind of pretty much a stranger. And it assumes that anybody in the business world, you know, is so busy that they forgot their childhood, and I don't know whether that's necessarily true of everybody. So right away, I don't get anything out of that at all. And if I don't know enough about him, then as the story progresses, I'm not going to really feel for anything. I want to go back to something that Kitty said in her review, which I certainly agree with, which is that if the whole purpose of this is for him to try to reach himself, to tell him to enjoy your childhood while you can, he may be doing something he doesn't need to do because I believe, Kitty, in your review, did you not mention that he appears to be having just a great time as a kid? So why the urgency?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, when he confronts him on the carousel, I mean, he's sitting there on the carousel, and I think he's either eating cotton candy or popcorn as he's sitting there on the horse riding the carousel. He's having a great time, and I'm like, what are you doing ruining your younger self's, you know, good time here on the merry-go-round? And he causes him to break his leg. It's like, well, now he shoots that summer to bits. You know?
Exactly, and if he had gone back and found himself as some sort of brooding, lonely child, hanging around his room, you know, not playing with any other kids, not enjoying the time that he had when he was just a young kid, then there would have been a sense of urgency, and he would have said, gosh, you don't realize when you're that age that one day you'll be working, making money, and you'll have responsibilities, and you won't have the time to really enjoy your life at the time that you can. I've got to prove to myself here that you can do that. But by going back, I mean, I didn't see where, you know, he was having a bad time. So that really doesn't make any sense. So right away, there's no real sense of urgency there. Ken, the science fiction aspect of this, if there is any, given it's the Twilight Zone, do you think they owed us an explanation as to how this came to be? I mean, he just gets out of his car, and all of a sudden, he's back in time. How does that work?
It didn't work.
I think that's happened in other episodes, though, Bob.
Well, so we get no explanation at all, just out of nowhere. I don't know, he gets out of his car, and all of a sudden, he's, you know, I just think that, you know, it would be nice to see something going on there. And he gets out of his car, and he walks, and he says, oh, so that's my old hometown. That's walking distance. I think I'll walk down there. And he walks down there, and what do you know? He's just there like that. All right, and we're up against a break right now. When we get back, we'll continue with our discussion. So let's take a break, and we will be right back.
Okay, Bob, that we will do. Back with more Talking Twilight Zone on Sharavision Radio.
Hi everyone, Susan McCrae. On my next Getting to Know You, pianist and composer Alan Simon, who's known in the jazz world as a musician's musician, a skilled, inventive player with an impressive command of both the traditional and modern jazz idioms. Alan Simon first attracted national attention during his years with the Lionel Hampton Orchestra. He's shared the stage with jazz legends as Dizzy Gillespie and Buddy Tate. He's also backed up George Coleman, Toots Thielemann, and Anita O'Day, just to name a few, all great jazz artists. So join me when my guest is Alan Simon, Tuesday evening, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, on KSAV.org, ShareAVision Radio Network. We're in the air, everywhere. KSAV.
And I so like the way Susan says, everywhere. Back more talking Twilight Zone. Here's Bobby.
Thanks, Dan. Our next program here on Talking Twilight Zone concerns an all-star hypochondriac turned Superman after he makes a deal with the devil that he will live and live and live and live and live to regret. Escape Clause, episode number 6, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Twilight Zone. Also, a couple of reminders. The group that started it all, The Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed, is open and very much in business, so please visit us there. And while there, also make sure to vote in all of our viewer polls. To date, every one of them is still open, and they will stay that way for some time to come. And our previous Yahoo discussion group, The Fugitive Views and Reviews, is also still open for business. We are reposting our original reviews in order, and people are posting and making new comments. Please feel free to visit there and do the same. We also still have 4 books on sale from each of that program's 4 seasons, all available online at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and other booksellers. There is even a rumor going around that in the future, perhaps by next year, there might even be Volume 1 of a series of Twilight Zone books. Just a rumor so far. We'll see how things turn out, and when and if it comes to be, it will be announced right here. I also want to take a minute out here to give a little shout-out to one of our regular listeners overseas in England. That's right, we're international these days. I recently got a couple of emails from Helen Weathers in England, and she had some very nice things to say about this program. She comes from our old Fugitive group and program, but she had no intention of coming here since she knew nothing about the Twilight Zone. I asked her to watch 2 classic episodes that we have not covered yet on this program and reconsider. She did that, and now she's a regular listener. Here is part of what she wrote to me, Talking Twilight Zone. It's turning out to be very entertaining, so I intend sticking with it. I have a vacation coming up in August with no internet access, so we'll disappear for a while, but we'll catch up on my return. Just want to say on behalf of my 2 co-hosts, thanks very much, Helen, for your continued support. And we'd also like to hear from other listeners. If you would like to make a comment on this show or make a suggestion or tell us how much you love us or hate us or whatever, feel free to do so. Please send any comments to bobbyneer@gmail.com, and we will read them right here on the air. Okay, back to the business at hand. Kitty has an email to read from one of our other most loyal listeners, Lynn Carpenter. And by the way, like I said, anybody else who wants to do this, feel free to do it. Lynn does this every week. She's also called into the show in the past and will again soon, I'm sure. So right now, here is Kitty with this week's listener email. Kitty?
Yep, it's from Lynn. She says, I certainly did not hate this episode and didn't really find it boring. I thought Gig Young did a great job as the frazzled and stressed out business executive Martin Sloan, who suddenly, for all intents and purposes, finds himself wandering into his old hometown and reliving his past life. Also, Frank Overton was very good in the role of his father. Did it have some flaws? Absolutely. I find it hard to believe that he expected to live in the house he grew up in with his former self as a boy. How was that going to work? Was Martin Sloan as a young boy supposed to be the adult Martin Sloan's mini-me as in the Austin Powers movies? Also, the man behind the counter in the ice cream parlor didn't seem very shocked when Martin reminisced about old man Mr. Wilson, who owned the shop, saying that he was now dead. He didn't even tell Martin that the old man was still alive. You also see a very young Ron Howard in the beginning of this episode, long, long before he became a mega director he is today. He scared that little boy, and he scared the younger Martin. However, this episode was not without its good points. The strained interaction between the older Martin, his father and mother was integral to this episode because his mother was frightened. His father had his doubts, and Martin was becoming more and more frustrated. When older Martin caused younger Martin to fall off the merry-go-round, causing him to have the limp he would carry with him throughout his life, it was imperative to show because he had no bad intentions toward the child. He just wanted him to know how important his childhood was to both of them. I thought the most touching and poignant scene came at the end when his father finally came to the realization and bewilderment that this was indeed his son, now an adult. You could feel how difficult it was for his father to tell Martin he had to go back to his present life and how tough it was for Martin to have to leave and return to the daily rat race. I did not rate this as classic or even excellent in the group polls, but I did rate it as good because it had some good moments and some good acting. I thought it was a very appropriate episode for the Twilight Zone.
Okay, thanks very much, Lynn. We appreciate that. I have a question for Ken. Given that this is a Twilight Zone, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, how about making it a little more science fiction-y and have him not only go back to his childhood, but during the story he's actually getting younger? What do you think of that?
Not bad. As far as what Lynn said, she gave it good because it had its moments. When I'm watching an episode, the beginning, the middle, and the end have to be good. If you're going to have a good moment, and then you're going to have a bad moment, and then you're going to have a flat ending, then to me, the episode's not good. It's poor. Now, your idea, Bob, you know, I was thinking, how would I write it? I would start off the episode where, you know, Sloan comes into the gas station or whatever, and then he sees two roads, like a fork in the road. He has to wait for his car, right? So he walks on one of the roads, and the road he walks on goes back into time. And then he realizes, you know, what happens, you know, with childhood, his house, his parents, and all that. Or the other road would go into the future and maybe do that. So have the first half the past and have the second half the future. And that would have been more eerie, more Twilight Zone-y. The way they did this episode, too slow moving, kind of like a turtle's pace with the carousel, the ice cream soda, you know, it's kind of slow, and then you see the parent, and I agree, Bob, you're going to fall asleep. You know,
well, you said in your review that you don't like things that are unresolved, and I agree with that, and I've always been that way, too. So when the episode ends and he simply walks away, having not been able to return to his childhood permanently, don't you think we would have added something if we had seen, just taken a few minutes to show him back at work, a little less harried and a little more understanding of how to take life a little easier? Don't you think that would have made sense, Kitty?
Oh, absolutely, because one of the things his father asked him, he said, well, he basically asked him, he said, aren't there any carnivals or I think it was aren't there any carousels or merry-go-rounds in the future? And he said yes, and he said, well, maybe you just need to look for them. And you know, and you asked Ken how he would write it. If I were to have written it, if the whole point was for him to remember his childhood, I mean, because you certainly, the younger Marty, obviously, it was evident to me that he didn't have any problems as a kid. But the whole point of this was for him to, it seemed, to remember what he had lost. I think it would have been much more poignant if it had waited longer before he realized just where he was. And that maybe he went back there. I mean, you saw him, he enjoyed the ice cream. So that was great. That reminded him of being young. And he went to the park, and the band was playing, and he enjoyed that. And then, you know, just slowly walk through, and, oh, there's the carousel that I used to love to ride on. And then, you know, he comes by a newspaper and realizes he's back in his childhood. And maybe, to me, what the whole point of the story should have been was that he needed to remember his childhood and to not be so harried and stressed out in his day-to-day
life. But I would like to be able to think that he learned something.
Well,
if
actually,
it simply ends with him walking back to his car, I'm not convinced he learned anything.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what he could have learned. And the first thing, too, that I would have also changed would be the casting of his parents. His parents in this episode look like they're his grandparents, not his parents.
Right.
I mean, and one of the things, I mean, I'm sure you saw the movie Peggy Sue Got Married, and one of the big moments in that movie early on is when Peggy Sue goes home because she's been transported back to the past to her high school, her senior year of high school. But one of the things she first notices when she gets back is she sees her mother, and she goes, "Mom, you're so young and you're so pretty." You know, and it's like it would have been interesting for him to see his mother and you know, just to appreciate her as this younger woman, you know, that he never really thought of his mom as a young person or thought of his parents as young people. And, you know, and I just think that, you know, some moments like those would have been a little bit better as opposed to him acting like a complete lunatic around his parents.
We're almost out of time, but I have a question for both of you to step away from the story for a minute. If you had the chance to go back to your childhood for a day or a week or a month or whatever and live that again, would you?
Oh, boy.
I would, because it was the 1960s, and I would say, I was born in 54, so 1960 I would have been 6. So from 1960 to about 1966, those were the fun years. You know, McDonald's, you know, the ball game, the movie theater. Actually, we had a double feature. It was a quarter to get in.
Okay, but suppose you could go back and become a child again, knowing everything you know now. In other words, you know what the mistakes were that you made because you'd have to relive your childhood, but in any childhood, some is good and some is bad. There's some tragedy along the way and things like that. I don't know that I'd want to relive those things. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I guess if I had all the knowledge that I have now, I could avoid certain things, and I could certainly tell certain people who brought unhappiness into my life to basically, you know, go away and leave me alone.
All I know is that it's been a difficult road getting here, and I'm not sure, when I think back, well, sure, there were some really nice things it would be nice to relive. But to go through all that again, to go through school again and do all that, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, feeling would be it was
it
was difficult enough the first time, you know. But, I mean, if I could go back for one day.
Right, the only reason to go back would be just to extend your life. That's about it.
I think
we'll stay where we are. All right, we're just about out of time. Thanks very much to Lynn for her email, and thanks to all of you. Thanks to you, Dan. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Well, that's perfect, Bob. Thank you all for another great Talking Twilight Zone. See you in 2 weeks. This is Share Vision Radio.